From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzette Gorlott, the Dean of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies, and welcome to Worldviews. Nick Prenetta's organization, Soil, provides low-cost toilets to households in Haiti and turns human waste into fertilizer.
So we have a member of our team that comes by to each house, collects the filled containers, which are sealed, and then gives them a clean one with cover material. We call it bon odeur, which means smell good.
But first, Rebecca Cruz and I will discuss the French trial of Equatorial Guinea's vice president on charges of corruption and the Indian prime minister's visit to the White House.
Trump actually commented that they are both big Twitter users, both having over 30 million followers, so that was something they have in common.
That's all coming up after news from NPR. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlott. Rebecca Cruz, let's start with an interesting issue in Equatorial Guinea. The vice president of the country, Vice President Mangue, he's on trial in France right now, facing major corruption charges. And this raises all kinds of interesting jurisdiction issues. This has been 10 years in the making, apparently, this case against this vice president. Tell us a little bit about what he has done and kind of about the context of the trial, because I think it does have interesting implications for the future.
This is a fascinating case. Vice President Mangue is the son of the president there. The president is actually the longest-serving head of state on the continent in Africa. He's been there since a coup in 1979. And he's being charged, as you said, with corruption, with money laundering. And this has come about because of the massive amounts of funds, government funds is the charge, that he has spent on mansions, on yachts, all sorts of opulences that he's spending this money on. And this is putting light in the fact that nearly 80% of the people in his country live on $2 a day. So where is this money coming from? And this has been something, as you said, that had been looked at for over a decade. And so the legal case here is very interesting because, as you say, why France? Well, he's actually been declaring his taxes in France. And so they have some jurisdiction or feel that they have jurisdiction. This trial just started. He's not going to show up, which is not a surprise. So whatever is determined may not actually affect him, but this is seen as a symbolic move, and perhaps they will get some of the money back. Perhaps not. It's a little bit difficult to say. This actually did go to the ICJ and the UN a while ago because they're saying, as a government official, the vice president's lawyers are saying, that he's immune from any of these charges. But the ICJ and the UN provisional court said that there was some jurisdiction in France because of the taxes, and the only thing that they couldn't charge him for was a mansion that he had in Paris that they said could be considered a diplomatic mission or a diplomatic house. So that will not be part of that. But this also goes back even further. The United States was involved in this at some point because he also spent a great deal of money in the United States, had a Malibu beach house, had spent some money on some Michael Jackson paraphernalia. And so that was an interesting case as well in 2014. Did come to an agreement with the United States where he had to give up $20 million to some NGOs and had to sell his mansion in the United States.
Very interesting. The ICJ, of course, being the International Court of Justice. And so I think that's what's particularly interesting about this case is not just, you know, we see corrupt officials around the world, but the fact that there's this kind of action being taken and prosecutions happening outside of one's country to prosecute what looks like a horribly corrupt person.
Well, and it has to do with where the items are bought. So they can take those items back or take that property back, but they won't actually be able to put him in jail or anything like that unless he actually goes to that area where those courts or those trials are taking place.
Well, hopefully it'll be a deterrent. All right, so now let's talk about the Indian Prime Minister's visit to the White House this week, visited with President Trump. Lots of hugs, lots of positive signs, an interesting outcome given there might have been some concern, at least the Indian government had previously expressed some concerns about the White House, the Trump administration courting China. India has concerns vis-a-vis China. So what's the story here?
Well, yes, as you said, it's a very friendly get-together. They're claiming that it was very friendly, came out with a joint statement on a couple of different things, looking to have a new trade agreement. Trump is obviously pushing very hard because there's a very large trade deficit with the United States and India. And India has at least said through their prime minister that they will consider laxing some of the restrictions on goods coming into the country. United States manufacturers are claiming that these are just outlandish and ridiculous, so they may be changing some of these so we could see more trade there. Also a joint statement on terrorism, asking Pakistan to ensure that terrorism is not coming from its country towards others. So that was a big joint statement as well. And we'll see how this relationship goes going forward. Looks positive.
There's been a complicated relationship between the United States and India for decades. So, I mean, I think they got along well under Obama, but there was also some concern at that time. So interesting step this week, I think, in the U.S.-Indian relationship.
Absolutely. And Trump actually commented that they are both big Twitter users, both having over 30 million followers. So that was something they have in common.
I'll be watching that, too. All right. Thanks so much, Rebecca. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this discussion or answer any questions you might have. Leave your comments in the Worldviews section of KGOU.org or like us, follow us, and interact with us on Twitter. We're at Worldviews KGOU and I'm at Suzette Gorlat. Next, I'll talk with Nick Prenetta about his organization's effort to improve public health in Haiti. I'm Suzette Gorlat, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlat, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Simple sanitation infrastructure doesn't exist in some places in Haiti. Our guest on today's show is Nick Prenetta, the Director of Strategy for the NGO Soil. Prenetta's organization tries to improve public health by providing simple toilets and by converting human waste into fertilizer. Nick Prenetta, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, Nick, you're involved in an organization called Soil, Sustainable Organic Integrated Livelihoods in Haiti. Very interesting work that you're doing there. Can you tell us a little bit about that organization, what exactly you're doing there?
Sure. So Soil is a 501c3, founded in 2006, and our work primarily focuses on developing social businesses around household sanitation in Haiti. And our work is in Haiti, but the work that we're doing is it's something that we hope is replicable around the world. The context in Haiti is different from others, but also very similar to a lot of other places around the world.
All right. Well, so the specific work that you're doing then, social businesses, is taking waste, or you're managing the waste, basically, that's being produced in households in Haiti. So can you tell us about that process, kind of what you're actually doing with waste in terms of trying to contribute to the sanitation of the communities and what the outcome of that is?
So the model that we use is it's an ecological sanitation approach where we're looking at a closed-loop system where wastes, and we're talking about poop, people often see it as a waste, but we look at it as a resource. So our model, we cover the entire sanitation chain, and we look specifically at urban areas where we do everything from produce the toilet and market and sell it to servicing and treatment. And our treatment is via thermophilic composting or hot composting, where all the things that we associate with poop that are dangerous, the different pathogens, those are eliminated, and the final product is a valuable compost that can be returned to the soil.
So you actually produce the kind of toilet. There's a special toilet that's required for this?
Yeah, so it's a dry toilet, which is it's a urine diversion. So it's a toilet. It costs about $25 to produce, all done in Haiti. It's a ferro cement toilet, but there's a special seat, a urine diversion seat, that diverts the urine into one container, and the poop drops into a second container. As part of the service, we provide a cover material, and after each use, the user takes that cover material and drops it into the container that has the poop. and it covers it, which has the effects of preventing any smell, but also reduces any type of fly breeding. And some people have these toilets installed in a building separate from their house, but others have it installed in their house and sometimes even in their bedroom. It all depends on their situation. But it speaks to the lack of smell of these toilets.
Which would be very important.
Yes.
And then there's a process, I guess, of collection that in terms of collecting this, the human waste, the poo.
The poop.
And then delivering it, I guess, to the processing plant where you then produce the compost, correct?
Yeah. So every week we do a door-to-door collection. And this is a service that people pay a monthly fee for. And this is, depending on the city, it's $3 to $4 US per month that people pay. For that, they get the weekly collection service and they get that cover material. So we have a member of our team that comes by to each house, collects the filled containers, which are sealed, and then gives them a clean one with that cover material, which is, we call it bons odeurs, which means smell good or good smelling. And then we take that to a transfer station and then eventually to our compost facility.
So I want to talk about what you do from there and what then you do with the compost. But I presume that this is a terrific alternative to having sewer lines and things like that, which are probably very difficult to implement in Haiti. You know, it's perhaps they don't have the infrastructure, I guess, for this sort of thing. So this is an alternative that's been created in order to just deal with the human waste issue. Because if they don't have one of your toilets and if they aren't dealing with this sort of thing, what are they doing? What is the alternative? What do you see happening there?
Yeah, so the sanitation situation in Haiti is pretty bleak, as well as the waste treatment. For the most part, people are using latrines or septic tanks, but in the areas that we are working and providing the service, they don't always have that option, whether it's because there's not enough space to build, whether it's too costly, whether there's not a space to get access to empty those, high water table, prone to flooding, land tenure issues where they can't have long-term investments. So it's uniquely adapted to these kinds of situations, these dense urban areas, which is one of the things that we see as becoming more and more common around the world. The global urban population is supposed to double by 2050. And the fact is that the municipalities are not going to be able to keep up and have the right planning in place. So this is going to be an option, you know, part of the kit that they have in terms of sanitation solutions for these types of communities.
So I'd imagine this is also probably something that's helpful to them after the earthquake. They had that very devastating earthquake a few years ago. I think it was 2010. So since that time, I imagine a lot of their infrastructure was devastated by that natural disaster. So is this something that you've really kind of got going after that experience and see, you know, to be much more successful given how they're able to rebuild in this way and in a more sustainable, you know, environmentally friendly way?
Yeah, so the government is certainly really interested in what we're doing. Previous to the earthquake, we had more of a traditional NGO approach where we were building toilets, also ecological sanitation models, so double vault toilets, but more public toilets, community managed, and that model was not working. So right before the earthquake, we were turning our focus to a social business approach, but also looking at household. But then the earthquake happened and everything got, you know, put to the side, and soil was involved in the emergency response. That was where we really were able to try out this, what we call the container-based sanitation in camps, where we didn't have any experience in emergency situations. So we got a lot of encouragement and pushing from partners and donors. And we started a pilot a month and a half after the earthquake. And that was really successful, ended up supporting 32 different sites around Port-au-Prince, a population of over 20,000 people. But that's really where we learned a lot about container-based sanitation, but also really developed our composting piece, which hadn't been there previously.
You're listening to my conversation with Nick Pranetta. He's the strategy director for soil. After the break, we'll discuss concerns about using human waste as a fertilizer. I'm Suzette Guerlat, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Guerlat, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Our guest today is Nick Pranetta. He's the Strategy Director for Soil, a non-governmental organization that works in Haiti on sanitation projects. Before the break, we were talking about converting human waste to fertilizer.
So let's talk about that, the composting part of it. Now, I'm just going to ask a really ignorant question because I know little
no
to really nothing
questions.
About these sorts of issues. I'm not yet a gardener using much compost. I'm working on it, though. But anyway, I've always been understood that human waste was not necessarily the best kind of fertilizer for agricultural products, that it just wasn't, you know, animal poo was better. How is it that you're able to take human waste, which obviously needs to be dealt with and removed and collected and managed in that way for sanitation purposes for the human population, but then turn it into something that you can use in the agricultural industry?
I think there's often two concerns when it comes to human waste. One, that we see more here in the U.S. because composting of human waste does happen. I mean, we talk about biosolids, the term that's used here in the U.S., but there's a lot of contaminants that are in there with the poop because it's got industrial waste as well. So there's been much more debate about what it can and cannot be used for because of those contaminants. But the second piece is the pathogens. And as we all know, and especially in Haiti, where there's biggest cholera outbreak in recent history that they're still trying to deal with, you know, managing the pathogens that are included in poop. But hot or thermophilic composting is one way to effectively eliminate them. It's a naturally occurring process. If you are controlling for certain parameters, so carbon to nitrogen ratio, the right kind of aeration, and the right amount of moisture, you have these naturally occurring microbes that decompose the material and they generate heat. These thermophilic organisms, sorry, I'm getting a little bit sciencey, but they thrive and they push the temperatures up above 140, 150 degrees Fahrenheit. And it's that heat that kills off the pathogens. I mean, you don't want it to get it too hot past, you know, 160 or so, then you start killing off a lot of the good bacteria. But what soil is basically doing is harnessing that naturally occurring process, making sure it's happening in a controlled situation, monitoring. So we have, you know, a strict temperature taking protocol, and then also testing at different points within our process to make sure that, yes, indeed, we are eliminating the pathogens before we bag it and then offer it for sale.
So your customers then are largely, are they home-based farmers or large industry, or who's buying and using your compost, and how has it been going so far?
Yeah, so I mean, the great problem that we have is that there's been a huge demand for this compost. There isn't a lot of other soil amendments that are available in Haiti. A lot of it is chemical fertilizers, and there's a huge problem with soil fertility. We haven't been able to keep up with demand. It's a lovely problem to have. Big agricultural companies have purchased from us, NGOs that are supporting farmers. Yeah, we're still working on who those long-term customers will be, if it's going to be the government helping us with the waste treatment and getting the compost in return. There's a number of different scenarios that we're working on, but it's definitely a product in high demand and one that's needed for the soils of Haiti.
Well, you mentioned the government. How well situated is the government to facilitate these sorts of things?
Yeah, so, I mean, in Haiti, unfortunately, the country has taken hit after hit. Natural disasters, there was the earthquake, of course, in 2010, but there was a massive hurricane last year that wiped out a huge agricultural area in the south. So the country just always seems to be reeling from natural disasters. When they're not dealing with those, there's political challenges that we've had with elections and transfer of power. So stability is also an issue. And adding on to all this in terms of water and sanitation in particular, the branch of government that's responsible for that was created in 2009. So they didn't even have a full year since being created before earthquake happened, government buildings, a majority of government buildings were wiped out. And there, the country's flooded with NGOs trying to respond. And also, I mean, the priority within the government in terms of water and sanitation, it's right now a low priority. So they're not able to make the kind of investments that would be really helpful and have a huge impact. But that's not to say that they don't support the work that we're doing. We have an agreement with the government to look at composting some of the waste from their waste treatment facility in Port-au-Prince, so the solids that are produced, seeing if we can take those compost, create a valuable product from those. And at the same time, they're also very interested in this household model, and they're watching us as we continue to refine the service and hopefully attract private sector involvement.
So, Nick, you mentioned earlier in the conversation about whether this is replicable. Can you tell us, are other NGOs, are other countries implementing this type of waste and sanitation process?
Yeah, sure. So there's actually an exciting development recently where some of the other groups that are doing similar work, we've created early stages of what we're calling the Container-Based Alliance. And we're all working in different parts of the world with different versions of soils model, although some are doing it with a public toilet model. And so these are, two groups in Kenya, one in Ghana, one in Peru, and one in Madagascar. And we're all working together to promote what we're calling container-based sanitation at the international level, to make sure that it's seen as what's referred to as improved sanitation. Also looking at or making sure that we're comparing all the different things that we're learning, whether it's in Haiti or in Kenya, and learning from each other in a more formalized fashion, because we're often compared to each other anyways. And also trying to get ahead of the game because of the success of not only Soil, but these other groups, there are a lot of people interested in replicating, and we often field a lot of requests for how can we replicate in Brazil or, whatever other country. We get emails and requests quite often. But trying to get ahead of the game where these groups who have quite a lot of experience working out the kinks of the different models to establish a set of standards or guiding principles for those that in the future do want to replicate so they have something to follow. But it's really our push is to promote this at an international level and gain acceptance of these models as a good solution to this growing urban sanitation crisis that's not going away anytime soon.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Nick, for being here today, for your very informative and interesting conversation. Thanks.
Thank you.
You've been listening to my conversation with Nick Prenetta. He works in Haiti with Soil, a non-governmental organization that works to improve sanitation. Worldviews is produced in partnership between KGOU and the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Katie Holland prepares our research, Jacob McClellan edited this interview, and Sam Dupre produced this show. For Rebecca Cruz, I'm Suzette Rolat.